Hello and welcome to the Wabi Sabi series podcast, unlikely conversations on uncomfortable topics. I'm your host, Michelle Cox, a corporate exec turned author who has recently written a series of books about topics we don't often talk about. Things like death, grief, not having kids, and the unexplained power doctors often wield over us. Apparently, some of my books have made some people feel a little uncomfortable, but I felt that I wanted to have far more conversations around weird, wonderful, and sometimes taboo topics. So I reached out to some interesting people and asked them just one question. If there is one topic that you'd love society to talk more about, what would it be and why? And what they've shared with me has been amazing. So let's dive in and see where the conversation takes us.
I think that's where it definitely comes down to really realizing and acknowledging that a gender conversation doesn't work unless we're talking about both male and female.
Amelia Veal is the chief storyteller and director at Narrative Marketing. She spends most of her time developing strategic marketing content for clients and investigating storytelling in the digital world with her Be The Drop podcast guests. Amelia has a passion for improving connection and engagement for brands and their customers through the power of story. She has been working on a brand new project, an 8-part documentary series called Transcending the Gender Narrative. Super excited to have you here today. Welcome to the other side of the mic, Amelia.
Well, thank you for having me, Michelle. It's exciting to be here on the other side, as you say.
Yeah, it's great. You're the master storyteller. So, you know, I feel like I'm under a little bit of pressure, but it's going to be fun, I'm sure. So this whole podcast is the premise is around one question, which is if there was one thing you wish society would talk more about, what would it be?
A conversation that I've been having recently and looking at how we can be having more of, because I don't think we're doing it very well, is to have a look at breaking through bullshit gender barriers. And you did say I could swear. I won't swear too much.
Go your hardest, sweetheart.
And so what I said to you in my email was, you know, that we need more men in the kitchen and other gender bullshit barriers. But really what I think we need to talk about is gender inequality. But what we're currently doing is avoiding some of the awkward, confronting and uncomfortable areas of that conversation. You know, obviously we do talk about gender equality and I'm really pleased to see we've been talking about it more. But there are areas of it that we're avoiding and I'd like to see more conversation in that space. So that's the short answer. Do you
love it? No, it's a great topic and one that's, you know, dear to our hearts. Obviously, a lot of us in the corporate world have been dealing with gender inequality for a lot of years, and there's a lot of discussion on things like pay gaps and things like that as well. So when you refer to the everyday kind of conversations, is that the type of stuff that you're having like at home or with your partners or with your families or with your kids? Is that where you think this is a good place to start?
I think it needs to be had at many levels. So, you know, I have been a female in the workplace for a number of years and I have, you know, experienced sexual discrimination in the workplace and I know friends in that who've had those experiences. I've also worked in male-dominated industries. So I have an interest in this space. And I brought that together recently in a documentary series that we're currently working on. It's called Transcending the Gender Narrative. It's looking at how we can take our gender conversation forward, because we have been talking about gender inequality and we're talking about it in the home and in the family responsibilities and in the workplace and, you know, how it manifests in other areas of our society, like in domestic violence or, you know, sexual harassment out and about in general society. So there are a number of spaces where we have been talking about this, but, you know, I feel like we have been talking about it for a really long time. And I think one of the reasons why we've continued talking about it but not necessarily had the successful rate in change that many people would like to see is because I think we avoid What we're not talking about in the gender conversation is what I think is holding us back. And I'll give you an example of that. So in this documentary series, I really wanted to interview both men and women because I don't believe you can have a gender debate that only includes half. And I really wanted to talk to some of those men that, you know, if you're talking about the pay gap, say, oh, there's no pay gap. You know, they don't believe in the pay gap and they don't believe that the equality issue for women is as serious as, you know, a feminist might present it, or somebody that a male that will, you know, take attack at feminists and say that they're man haters, etc. You know, some of those conversations. And when I started the documentary, I must admit that my personal space was that bloke, whoever this fictional bloke was, you know, didn't have very good opinions. That's what I thought. So, you know, and that they were obviously somebody who mustn't be intelligent or mustn't be kind, or, you know, all of these sorts of presumptions that I was making, you know, and like sort of in a mindset of, oh, well, men have had such a great run. It's too bad. You know, it's time to let go of some of that. So I have my own biases that I'm bringing. And in that conversation, I'm judging somebody else whose bias I am perceiving as negative. But previously, there haven't been great conversations between those two separate groups, right? Somebody who myself more aligns with a feminist style conversation and a male on the other side of that. So I really wanted to interview those people, but I needed to be able to do so in a respectful way, because if I don't respect that person, if I don't have the tools to have a good conversation with them and actually listen and hear their perspective, even if I don't agree with it, you know, so they're the conversations that we're not having or we're not doing well. You know, if a bloke does make a comment on Twitter, for example, and talks about how women should just be in the kitchen, it's not a great comment, right? But that bloke is likely to be vilified, dramatically so. And look, part of me says, well, that's because it's a silly comment and he was probably potentially being provocative in that. But if we really want to, you know, transcend these narratives, if we want to move beyond the limitations that they present, then we actually need to start having space around those conversations and allowing some of those conversations. And they are offensive and they can be inflammatory, but what we're not doing is allowing space to process that. If somebody is publicly vilified, then the next person isn't necessarily likely to say something. And at that level, at that very extreme level, I think, you know, I don't really want to give those types of conversations a lot of space, although, right? Even though I've just said we need to give more space. But there are layers of that conversation underneath that lean towards that sort of thinking that we do need to give space to.
When you've said about you interviewing people for the documentary, those people that did have the challenges or, you know, thinking completely different to you, how did you cope with that? And what were those conversations like? Obviously, we'll have to wait to see the documentary, but I'm just curious how they went and did they surprise you with some of their responses?
To be honest, it is a video documentary series that's going to be broadcast on TV. So true feminist haters, I couldn't convince any of them to get on camera and be part of the documentary series, which, look, I think is an indication of either they don't truly believe in those or the fear that we have created around that. And this is very challenging to navigate because this is around humanity and we want to allow this freedom of conversation, but understanding that sometimes those conversations can be really hurtful. So there does have to be barriers around that. I'm not advocating that people should be able to say really inflammatory, hurtful things and not have any repercussion around that, because that doesn't help us in transcending narratives either. We need to be respectful in these spaces. But if we go back a level, so that, you know, they're quite extreme views, but if we go back a bit and we talk about maybe even quotas, for example, within a gender conversation and trying to have more women in particular in workplace positions that have predominantly been male. Now, so some of the conversations that we had with men in that scenario was, you know, how do you feel about the fact that you might need to lose your job because you're a male and we need to have more women in this workplace to create a balance and an equality? And those men are finding it really challenging to have that conversation, because of course that would be, you know, it sounds great for them to say, oh, I'm a supporter of equality, so I'm happy to lose my job. But they're still human and, you know, realistically, and we've just gone through a period where people are losing their jobs and we know how hard that is. We know the stresses and the challenges that brings. So asking somebody to just happily step aside from their job because of a greater good is a big ask. So I think we need to be respectful in that conversation. And look, at this beginning of the process, I'm happy to admit I don't think I was respectful of that process. But coming back to your question and what are the things that I want us to be talking about more that we're not talking about, is this process around allowing awkward and difficult conversations and not being judgmental of them. I realize it's a huge ask, which is why we don't do it, because we're allowing for humanity to be different. We're accepting indifference. That's what we really need. Like, we need to step into that and go, this person might have a different perspective, but it doesn't necessarily come from a bad place.
Yeah, and sometimes it's been having that ability to sit in the discomfort, isn't it? To be able to sit with someone, and just because they are different and they have a different opinion doesn't mean that they're necessarily a bad person. Their life and world circumstance to bring them to that point is very different to yours. So they have a different lens on the world, and we need to sort of appreciate that and understand it. And I think given, you know, there's a lot of horrendous things going on in the world at the moment. Obviously, all the stuff in the US, again, is a real lack of understanding of, you know, of others.
Yeah, because we don't comfortably talk about that. Like, because we're worried about being PC or having correct conversations and not offending people, then sometimes we do actually not have conversations. And this goes across a whole range of things. In this documentary series, it's looking at gender inequality, but we've recently been working on a Reconciliation Week video with some local councils. So we produce video and audio content for clients. And a number of the conversations, so the Adelaide Hills and Mount Barker councils have a reconciliation working group, and that's made up of different Aboriginal people local to the area. And they were saying that one of the key things is they want people to feel comfortable asking questions, because a number of Australians don't, and we don't understand our Aboriginal culture and history as well as potentially we should. And there have been lots of previous hurt. And so with that, then even well-meaning people who would like to know more don't know how to ask the questions. So the conversations that we're not having is often based on that fear of not knowing how to ask. But if we can be more confident that people are coming from good intentions and not jumping to conclusions that they mean to be hurtful. And that is challenging, because we come with our own set, as I said at the very beginning, which is why I started with that, we come with our own bias. We start judging what people are saying based on our own filters of information.
If you have a topic burning inside you that you'd love to talk more about and have a conversation with me, I'd love to hear from you. So drop me a line at hello@wabisabiseries.com. Let's head back to the chat. How do you guide people to navigate that? Like, even if you're sitting around your, you know, dinner table and your family member or a guest or something has got a completely different view to you, how would you advise people go about that? To your point of holding space, not being scared to have the conversation, what are the steps we need to start doing?
It's really challenging, and one of the greatest things that's come out of this documentary process for me, I think, is really thinking about that. And I think we need to consciously think about that fact that we have to try and create this space. So some of the things that I would do to answer your question is try and maintain my own emotional response. Now, sometimes that's a lot easier said than done, because some of the things that people are saying are, you know, if they're racist or they're sexist or that sort of, you know, I don't want to be perceived as tolerating that sort of language or words. And sometimes I think we need to allow the fact that there are some barriers that we won't tolerate. You know, as you mentioned, the example of the racism and the ramifications that's having in America right now, that is intolerable action. It's such fine lines. So I think it's about being aware and understanding the space. So if I'm at a dinner table with family, then giving space to listen to that person, you know, if it's family and friends or somebody that I know, giving space and listening and trying to control my emotional response if I might disagree, but then potentially following up. If I'm not at that particular point, if I can't answer or articulate my response correctly at that time because I'm emotional about it, then I'll sit on it and I'll follow them up. I'll go back to them, and I think that's what we don't do. We don't lean into that and follow through and go, right, well, maybe now's not the time, but I'll do it later. Or it might end in an argument. Still follow it up, you know, and go back and look at how we can navigate those spaces. And what I did in the documentary, I mean, because I was an interviewer, so it wasn't about my opinion, so that helped anyway. And I was trying to come at the documentary from a perspective where it wasn't my opinion, which is like the idea for a documentary. And so I had to be non-biased. So I tried to recognize my bias early so that I could be aware of that and try and avoid it. I am a female, so I can't remove that from my personality. So that's always going to be there. And I think having that understanding and awareness that we all have bias. I think sometimes when you're reviewing somebody else and you think that you're disagreeing with their bias, that's terrible that that person has that opinion or, you know, thinks that, without really recognizing that we come with our own. So potentially a first step is to recognize that we all have bias. You know, we all have some sort of privilege that comes from different perspective or something, you know. So
and yeah, we need to learn to park that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. To try and, as you said, start to keep your emotions in check. I think that's a really good point. So the other thing that I wanted to kind of brush on there, though, you talked about, so there's obviously big issues that are going on, and there's some interesting stats that have been coming out through the kind of COVID time of how a lot of female executives have kind of taken a bit of a step back in the sense because of what they've had to deal with in the home front as well. So still hold their jobs as their partners have been, but then also potentially doing all the homeschooling. There was all these statistics around what's been going on in Australia through this time. So I'm curious on your view of, because you talked about, you know, in the home front, how we can have those conversations and change things up as well. And it's one thing to fight the battle in, you know, the corporate world, but what's actually going on in your own, you know, in your own home as well to either fuel or actually progress these, you know, changes in this state?
Yeah, look, and I think that's where it definitely comes down to really realizing and acknowledging that a gender conversation doesn't work unless we're talking about both male and female. And so if we're looking at wanting to have more females in senior leadership and more female representation on boards, because currently it's still around 17% female representation on ASX listed boards in Australia, it's too low, like 17% representation for nearly half the population. That doesn't spell equality in any shape or form. But women are still overperforming in the family responsibilities as well. So you can't expect to have more women on boards if they're still taking more of the responsibilities at home. And so the flip side of that conversation is we also need men to step up and take on board more of that responsibility at home. And there has been a number of studies that have come out during COVID that have indicated that, you know, it's really shown some of these pressure points where women are, you know, they're working in the leadership roles and they're working in those spaces that we want more women in, but at home, that the confrontation of home responsibilities and trying to work from home has really brought to the forefront that there's still a long way to go if we want equality to happen there. You can't have more women on boards if they're also managing the family as well. So that's where their partners need to be involved in that. So there needs to be more responsibility shared at home. So definitely this conversation needs to go. It's not just about workplace reform. And one of the people that we interviewed has a company, it's a tech company, and she's the CEO of the company, and they took it to America to expand that company. And when they did that, she moved to America and her husband stayed home with high school age children. And the children were fine, her husband was fine. Actually, she works in tech industry, which sometimes has a bad rap for women, but she found she got lots of respect in the industry, and the challenge was actually in the school environment where teachers made comments about her mum abandoning the children to the children, you know. And so it's our broader community as well. Like, that's terrible, you know. Like, we can't have that sort of, you know, literally the term bad mum was used, that her mother was a bad mum because she'd gone international to expand the company. Whereas there are men that do that on a regular basis. And I can't imagine, you know, my husband is a fly in, fly out dad. And people don't say he's a bad dad. I mean, he works in the mining industry. There are many dads in the mining industry, and they're not labelled bad dads because they're financially supporting their family, and that's potentially an acceptable role for dads. And we don't have robust conversation about that. That's one of these bullshit gender barriers that I mentioned at the beginning. Like, you know, a bad mum, that, like, we have comedy TV shows that are made about that. And I think it's great because at least comedy can reference how crap the connotation is. But also I think people just go, oh yeah, you know, and don't even really understand the systemic level of, you know, brainwashing, I suppose, or lack of better terminology, that we have around gender norms. We just accept that.
Yeah, I've got a couple of mates that their partners and their husbands are the main caregiver for the children. So, you know, call them house husbands, but that's not really a great name either. And I remember them telling me some of the stories where when they'd be at school and, you know, the other mums would say, oh, where's your wife today? Where's this, you know, whatever. And he's like, well, she's at work. And, you know, and he's like, oh, you're such a good dad, you know, for doing the school drop off and pick up. And he's like, well, you know, do people say you're such a good mum? Like, it's no big deal. That's my job. Again, that the sort of connotation. And I think so there's one part to your point about all of us getting a little bit more comfortable with that and then calling out those kind of elements that is no big deal, or it's not appropriate. And the flip side to that is also, you know, the people in themselves actually, as you say, like males advocating for women where they can to be, you know, calling that sort of stuff out and say, that's fine. Actually, my wife works and I do another job and we split, you know, we split the duties and stuff as well. But I do feel that there is an element there that we have to take responsibility in our own relationships too. You know, my husband would love to get away with not doing any of the housework if I would let him. it's an equal partnership. We both work big hours. We've been together for 19 years. And I'm like, that's the gig. Like, we should be sharing this stuff.
Equality means different things to different people and at different times. Like, so there does need to be acceptance for the fact that, you know, in a family unit, for example, it might not mean that both people work exactly the same hours in a workplace and then they share exactly the same load at home. And this, it doesn't have to mean a 50-50 split at home, and it can work different ways for lots of people. So individually, I think, you know, equality can mean completely different things. But as a broader, you know, community and culturally, then yes, this is what you mean. You're these conversations where, oh, well, you're such a great dad because you did a parenting responsibility. And this is where we need to think about that it's not a mum nor dad role necessarily, because they're parents. So it's not a male or female. It's not an us or them. We're looking at how do we transcend into better conversations as humans. You know, somebody could be suited to a job because they're a process thinking type of person, or it's their personality. That shouldn't necessarily be gender specific. You know, there are really very few types of jobs and roles that are quite gender specific. I mean, somebody might prefer a female doctor if you're a female, and that's a preference thing. Like, as a role of doing the jobs, it's very rare that gender necessarily is the qualifying requirement.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's the same with all of these things. So in these conversations, it's, I think, you know, if we're looking at how do we have better conversations and how do we have those awkward conversations, you know, we need to lean into less us and them and more a shared collective. And that's what I think we're not doing. If there was, maybe it's one style of conversation. I really think what I'm looking for. And again, I, you know, we're nearly at completion of this documentary process. And as I said, it's called Transcending the Gender Narrative, but really the concept that's intrigued me the most is transcending narratives. You know, how do we move our stories and our ability as bigger groups, community groups, and society as a whole to have more robust conversations, to remove some of this us and them, these terrible things like trolling on social media and just this transcending concept has really struck a chord with me because I think we can do better. I think we can have better conversations. And, you know, we have got caught up in a political correctness that does actually inhibit that. I think there's a great space for political correctness because I think we need to be mindful of what we say and the impact it has on others. But I think we can still do that and say things that are not necessarily hurtful. You know, if we're asking questions and we're doing it with good intent, you know, we want to learn more about our Aboriginal Australians and their culture and their history, and we're coming from a place of lack of understanding. We may sometimes ask questions in a way that could be deemed inappropriate, but really then we want to try and go get to a point where there's no such thing as an inappropriate question. You can be hurtful, but that's quite different, and that comes down to intent.
I think you're right. The intent is the key point there, right? So, and I think if you are about to have a conversation like that that is a little bit uncomfortable, I think I kind of, because I tend to ask people lots of questions that sometimes makes them uncomfortable. To me, it's from, I come from a place of curiosity. And so if I think that it's a little bit, oh, this could be a little bit curly or it might be a little bit awkward, I kind of preface it and say, hey, I don't know if this is inappropriate, but I would really love to understand about your culture or your religion or whatever it is that I want to ask the, you know, the in-depth conversation around the question on. And I kind of preface it with that and say, but please tell me if it's offensive, but I just like to understand it more. And 100% of the time people have always said, oh no, absolutely, ask me whatever. And, you know, and then we get into the conversation from there. So I think you've really touched on some beautiful points there, Amelia. And, you know, this podcast is all around having uncomfortable conversations that, you know, hopefully spark a little bit of interest in someone to learn more about something. And I think you've done that today. I think, you know, really opening our eyes to that whole kind of gender conversation in all parts of our lives is really important. And as men, women, transgender, however you identify, I think it's, you know, it's vital more and more these days that we do understand each other's positions, but we also equally need to have supporting each other to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, 100%. And really having those conversations that might make us feel awkward. And as you say, prefacing it with like, I'm not sure if this is appropriate. But if we can create spaces where people feel more comfortable asking those questions, then I think we bring ourselves forward together. You know, it's likely that if you've got that question, somebody else does too. And they might be sitting there going, oh, I don't know if I can ask that. Or, and then it's not just about the questions and the asking, it's the action. What are we going to do with those answers? How are we going to actually transcend with our stories? Because for me, storytelling is the ability that helps us make decisions and change. So it's not just around a lovely story and creating better narratives. It's about then what does that mean in a manifestation in our lives? So it's really seeing how we can drive positive change.
Beautiful way to wrap it up. Thank you so much for chatting today. It's awesome to hear your views on this topic, something that you're very passionate about. And I can't wait to see the documentary. I'll have all the information in the show notes. But yeah, if there's anything that you would like to finish with today.
Oh, me on the finishing. I should have had a closer for you. Well, firstly, thanks for having me. And definitely, yes, I love the concept around asking questions and, you know, really investigating things and thinking about that bigger picture. And as I said, being aware of where your bias might be limiting you. It's really hard to identify our own bias and look at ourselves in that sort of self-critical way. And it's not to say, oh, I'm a bad person. It's not to negatively view it. It's just to be aware of it. And I think if we can see it just as an aspect of who we are in the same way that we might have blonde hair or whatever physical characteristics we might have, that's a part of who we are. Our experiences and the perceptions or potential biases that they bring with us are a part of us. But if we can be open to them and open to understanding that they might limit our knowledge or awareness, then we can learn and we can evolve.
Abso-bloody-lutely. Great synopsis. So thank you so much, Amelia. It's been awesome to chat today.
Thanks, Michelle.
If you'd like to learn more about today's guest, you'll find all the show notes and interesting links on our website, wabisabiseries.com. If you'd like to hear more unexpected conversations, please subscribe to the series, follow us on our socials, or grab one of my books. And if you're in a generous mood, I'd love you to share the episode, or maybe even rate, review, and comment on the series. It really does make a difference. Until next time, be sure to claim your own piece of wabi-sabi and walk proud in your perfect imperfections.